This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
No, it's me, the Triple SD. Welcome to this Deep In Sessions. How are you? Buckle up, because today we're diving deep with a true architect of the Aotearoa Underground. From the jagged art punk of the features, to the boundary-shattering industrial multimedia of Fetus Productions, our guest has spent over four decades redefining what music can be. He was using samplers and surgical field recordings before they had a name, and he's moved seamlessly from the warehouse raves of 90s London as ICU to scoring the visceral, psychological dread of films like David Blythe's Wound. He is an innovator who has lived through every technological shift in the game, always keeping one foot in the shadows and the other on absolute bleeding edge. Please welcome a genuine OG of the sonic and visual arts, Jed Towne. Kia ora, Jed. How are you? How are you feeling today?
Triple SD. What a great day to have a question and question and answer session. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. Yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. I hope you are too. And I've got some questions that will ideally make you feel better. Are you ready for these?
I am.
All right. So, in the early 80s, Fetus Productions was famously using medical loops and autopsy footage to challenge the idea of the perfect human. Looking back, do you see that era as a form of social activism, or was it purely about breaking the traditional rock band aesthetic through shock and visual texture?
Well, that's a very loaded question. I always try and keep things relatively simple.
Fair.
And I think when I left school, I was so full of stuff in my head, I really needed to clarify what I was doing here as a human.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, unless I get some traction on that question, then I won't really be knowing what I was doing. So I discovered reactions and feelings within my being, and that kind of was the guiding hand, shall we say, that pushed me towards being a musician or an artist. So the idea of a perfect human is in a way correct. Mm-hmm. We're all born perfect, even if we've got defects and mental issues and physical deformities. We're all perfect in a way, because we're a product of our parents or the chemical aesthetics of being a human.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of a rock band is so ambiguous, it's ridiculous, really. But the fact that people can get together and work at trying to create an art which hopes to answer some of these questions. Why are there mutancies? Why are there deformities? And that led us to discover the medical world's meaning of these words, you know. And one of the crucial things back in the 80s was the nuclear testing with the atolls by the French and
true.
All these, you know, military experiments were causing mutancies. So that was a real opener, and the picture on our first album was a Cyclops baby, which Mike discovered, and he went on to ask similar questions, you know, why are these children born like this? And it wasn't particularly there to shock and upset people, but it was a big question mark. And we, along with Sarah, we started off, exploring the cavernous area of human. What is it? And it still continues to this day in its various forms.
Wow.
So I hope that might answer that loaded question.
It really does answer that loaded question. And, you know, like, you know, many of our listeners will not understand what it was like to grow up in the 80s like I do, and you certainly do. You're under the spectre of nuclear annihilation and also in the shadow of Chernobyl. So, because that image of the Cyclops baby, that is from Chernobyl, isn't it? It's like post-Chernobyl. Am I right in assuming that?
We don't know because the medical... We had a medical library in Auckland, and I was working as an early morning cinema cleaner, cleaning all the rubbish from the seats and everything.
Uh-huh.
And so I had the rest of the day to do whatever I pleased. And unlike a lot of musos out there who have jobs and everything, I had plenty of time to discover things that I wanted to discover. And that was just one image. And it was a very old book. It was like a 1950s.
Oh, wow.
1960s book, so it would have been way before Chernobyl.
Yeah, yeah.
And but it was just such a powerful image, and he decided to use it in his Elam art. I don't know what you call it. It's not really a schooling, shall we say?
Yeah.
And got 0 out of 100 for it. So beautiful. It shows you how the authorities reacted to those kind of. You know?
Yeah, which is an intriguing kind of thing, you know, the pinnacle of artistic learning, Elam going, oh, no, can't do that. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love it. So you were an early adopter of samplers and field recordings using surgical sounds as instruments before it was a common trope at a time when technology was physically demanding and limited. How did those constraints actually fuel your creativity compared to the infinite options available in a modern digital environment now?
There's always right ways around problems, and I used cassette tapes, so you could get a blaster and stick a cassette in it and drag it, because it had batteries, you could drag it anywhere, and that's how the sounds to the beginning of what's going on were created. Just a cassette recorder and a bridge in the at the Mangere crossover, you know.
Yeah,
At that time, it's just pipes, and there was lots of rubbish and bits of metal around, so we just grabbed bits of metal and were astounded by the sound they created. And I think samplers were the next level. By 1983, I think Mike had bought a SDD delay unit which had a one-button loop thing. So you record something, press the button, and the loop goes on and on and up. So
wow.
That was used in the classical track from box set and Luminous Trails, I think. And, these things just evolved, and eventually we got sampled. When the techno scene arrived, the Akai S700 and the S950 and all that, it greatly expanded that way of using samples.
Wow.
But as you know, back in those days, 20 megabytes of memory, I think, cost me something like $600.
Far out.
It's crazy. At a little chip. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? These days we're talking terabytes, and those days we were in megabytes.
Wow.
But I thought a megabyte was a million bits of digital information.
Yeah.
And thinking, wow, that's huge, that's more than we need. But whether things have improved, I don't know. Back in those days, there were pressures on us to be successful and things like that. And, we just grabbed what we could to create those sounds. And they were there.
Yeah.
If you look hard enough, you'll find it.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, like, out in the world, there's all sorts of dalliances and intrigue and everyday life, right? So you just need to tune your ear to it and be ready to record
exactly.
It whenever you can.
Yeah, I mean, and at the basis of all that is that beautiful word feeling that it's beyond what we understand, and you're just trying to find something that you want to find. It's a fascinating subject.
Yeah, it is. It could go forever.
It's an infinite subject, really. Feeling, because we've so much to learn about it, and yet you can't understand it. So how do you get around that question?
Well, that's it. I guess you
create art. I suppose that's what we do, isn't it?
Absolutely, and be reactive and introspective and hyper aware and tunnel into ideas that make you, kind of shirk and feel. Whatever that feeling is, it could be pain, it could be joy, it could be whatever, but you should lean into it, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm learning constantly, and one of the things clairvoyants do is they don't try and get those people coming through from the dead or whatever they do. They just let it happen.
Yeah.
If you try, you kind of, You block it almost, and fascinating subject.
It really is.
Even Christ says God is beyond understanding, and you go, well, okay.
Okay, fair.
We'll try. Yeah, here's the answer.
That's very true. So your work moved from the bludgeoning industrial noise of the mid-80s towards the more structured melodic beauty of Luminous Trails. Was that shift a natural maturing of your ear, or were you intentionally trying to see if industrial textures could exist with pop sensibilities?
The industrial thing was a kind of an accident for us, because it wasn't around when we started using metallic. But the feeling I had was a metallic vibe about, it's hard to describe, but there was I could sense there was something I had to move towards, and that was the word I would say was metallic.
Uh-huh.
And it was a maturing, I guess, but also part of the fetus aesthetic was we had to have dynamics. So we couldn't just have the hard, bludgeoning, crashing sounds of metal. We also had to have the soft undercurrent of water and acoustic sounds, soft
yeah.
sounds. That increases the effect of the metallic. And that the pop sensibilities, I guess, when you get an album that's just banging all the way through the same, it just, for me, it doesn't really work as well. I need to have the soft and the hard together.
Yeah. that duality, eh? You know, because it's too hard on the ear, it's too hard on the spirit. So you need to have that kind of hook that brings it back down to the organic, because you know it's quite.
Yeah.
You know, the metallic is quite, you know, like human created, hard, cold, but you need that kind of you know, the warmth from, you know, like water,
yeah.
Or you know, which is a weird sort of paradox because water generally isn't warm, right? But it like brings that feeling of warmth.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting vibe. I remember we heard that war story of the soldiers when Christmas came, they stopped shooting each other and had a game of football in the trenches, you know, with the Germans,
mm-hmm.
which kind of showed the people are, they love warmth. Even though they're fighting each other, they will get together.
Yeah, and be human.
Show that the common bond, that's our bond.
Yeah.
You can't bond with someone that's screaming at you, can you really?
No, you
but
can't.
You can if they're smiling at you.
Yeah, I like that. I like that metaphor. That's a good one. So after your time in London, in the London rave scene and techno scene, what was your impression of the Auckland electronic landscape when you returned? Did you find a local scene that had found its own voice, or did it feel like you're bringing back dispatches from the future that New Zealand was still catching up to?
Yeah, that's an interesting question as well. The London scene was just incredible. You had pirate stations going around London and they were getting busted by the radio authorities. No, you can't broadcast this. But as soon as they got caught, they would just shift their antennas to another high-rise building.
Okay.
Because London's a huge place. You drive 50 miles and there's just city everywhere. You know, it's hard to grasp, but like LA, you drive down the motorway for 2 hours and you're still in LA, you know.
Yeah.
Insane amount of building concrete. But when I did return, by then I'd started my own label, Sawtooth Recordings, and had a few releases under my sleeve and came back thanks to Mike Weston's immersion concert, which I played at. And I found the scene was quite established in Auckland. There were guys into electro house and techno, and it was great. It just felt like a breath of fresh air because New Zealand's such a beautiful place in the summer, especially.
Oh yeah.
And it was clean compared to London.
Yeah, true.
Like in London, you look out on your window pane and it's just covered in soot. And yeah, it's just filthy, you know. I was feeling quite, not sick, but I didn't feel that healthy, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just felt wanted again, you know. It felt good to be wanted by someone to do something.
Yeah, true.
So, New Zealand's always been a good place to do music. Just finding the venues, and back then there were quite a few venues around, and there seemed to be a lot of support for the new electronic scene, and that's why I decided to come back.
So like when was that, just a context, when did you come back to New Zealand from being
around? It was 96.
Oh yeah.
So you know, it seems like a long time. It's 30 years ago.
It's crazy how long that feels like. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm really feeling my age today. Oh, God. 96 was an amazing time, you know, for music in Aotearoa, if you don't know out there. I mean, what Jesus saying, how the scene was just pumping and like you're really vibrant, is absolutely true. You could literally go out pretty much every night and find some kind of intrigue. It was very, very special time. Very special.
Yeah, it was, and you know, I just felt a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was such a struggle in London because if you could imagine 200 releases every week, that by that I mean vinyl records,
yeah,
were coming out, and you know, that was only what's been released. So you can imagine how many other guys were trying to DJ and do techno and house and all that. It must have been on a massive scale.
Yeah.
And with the technology, right, we had Cubase, Atari, and these what you call primitive computers back in the day. But
yeah.
With Cubase, you could get pirate software for nothing and record, you know, 20, 30 tracks. And because we had samples, all that was MIDI, and everything could be MIDI'd up.
Uh-huh.
And with the visuals, you could sync it up with a Synthi encoder.
Yeah.
And everything was synced up with the sound. And so we created a lot of videos, and which were all copied from, you know, whatever sources we had.
Yeah.
And then that would be linked up to video projectors. And of course, in the clubs, you'd have UV lights and fluorescent paintings, and it was all conducive to having a good night.
So certainly.
At 4 in the morning.
Yeah, like 7 or 10 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah,
evening.
Well, for me, it was usually over by 5 and I'd be in bed by 6.
Yeah.
And I didn't take a lot of external chemicals to survive the night. It was just all... The energy was just there, you know.
Yeah, the vibe was high. Yeah, I understand.
They didn't need drugs, really.
No.
I didn't, anyway.
No. And when the vibe is running, you just run with the vibe, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your collaboration with David Blythe on the film Wound is a visceral piece of cinema where the soundscape is almost the character itself. How did your history with disturbing medical imagery and fetus productions inform the way that you approach the sonic dread and psychological layers needed for that specific score?
Again, it all comes down to feeling. And never say no to that sort of thing. The idea that, I've got a film, I don't know if I can do that. That you just knock that out of your head straight away.
Yeah.
And the history of doing all this dynamic music just came into in the whole process, because if you're doing a soundtrack, you generally write 10 times more than is actually used. So
true.
Every day you go in there and you just have a go at a few things. You maybe do 3 pieces, you know, sketches, shall we say, every day. And because I was using Ableton, I had access to a big library of sounds there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of... I bought quite a lot of synthesizers, you know, for the techno stuff. So I had a lot of sounds at my fingertips to use. And so you just watch the rush of the footage you're going to be playing to, and just, you know, pick a little bit and see how they work. And when they do work, bingo. And luckily, I'd known David since Auckland Boys Grammar days.
Ah, yeah. So you got that got that language already, eh?
Yeah, and he'd done Angel Mind back in 77, I think, and worked with Suburban Reptiles, and he loved that whole punk thing, and both of us loved a lot of the early Polanski and Ken Russell and, you know, Clockwork Orange. All those early movies were quite full on, you know.
Yeah.
So we had a love for that dynamicism within art, and that just made it all easy to, you know. The problem is, if you get a director that's quite picky and stumbles over the first piece that you've written, you forget that you've got a whole movie to do. You can't just get stuck on one little bit. You have to look at the whole thing as a piece.
Yeah, you have to kill your darlings, hey, as they say in the biz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also the beauty is that you can always change things around once the final piece comes together. It's not like everything's written in concrete.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite a reactive, sort of immersive and reactive space, I would imagine. And, if you're out there, you should definitely go and watch Wound, go and watch Angel Mind and all of David Blythe's work. He's, one of my personal favourite directors that have blessed us in Aotearoa. So you've been the central figure in the New Zealand underground for over 40 years, having seen it evolve from the DIY tape trading days to the digital era. Do you think that the underground still exists as a physical place of innovation, or has it become more of a mental state for the artist?
That's a kind of strange question in a way, because yeah, of course the underground's there, but I think we've been severely cut back over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
the occurrence of lockdowns and discrimination amongst people's ideas was quite abhorrent. People were afraid to die, and we've been talking about death for, like you say, 40 years. Mm-hmm. So the idea of death is not a new concept. So a lot of people were absolutely scared that they're going to die, right?
Yeah.
So, we've got to do this to stop ourselves from dying. But why close all the venues? You, in a way, yeah, it kind of makes sense. But people have to go out, enjoy themselves, interact with each other. If the plague's out there, fair enough, cut the clubs.
Yeah.
But at least you should try and get people to keep creating and, encourage the idea of interaction. And relying on the government to get all those things correct is not real, really. It's not sensible.
Yeah.
I think a healthy distaste of authority is quite good. Because we're not a perfect society,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people feel left out, and a lot of people are angry that this isn't happening and that's not happening. But within every person, there's a universe going on where you have to create or be with what you love doing.
True.
So that world is well worth investigating, and for me, it's like I have my days where I just feel like yesterday was just a perfect day because the weather was beautiful, there's no wind, I could take macro photos without the plants moving around.
Nice.
and I felt so nice, and I was just very appreciative being alive at that moment, and I think if anything, that's what life's all about. It's just feeling good in the moment.
Yeah, that's very true.
I don't know if that answered that question.
No, it really did. Thank you. That was a very articulate answer. I appreciate it. So with projects like Ghost Town, there is a clear nod to psych pop and melodic songcraft. After decades of being at the bleeding edge of electronic and industrial music, what is it about the classic songwriting format that finally pulled you in? And does it feel like coming full circle?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when I was in my 20s, I thought, fuck, if I haven't made it by 21, I'm not going to do music anymore.
Wow.
And because, it seemed the pop sensibilities are, you've got to be a teenager or something. And when you hit 20, you're over the hill, But, of course, that's not true. There's still guys in their 80s, got Stones, and still going,
Yeah.
Apparently, the latest Stones album is meant to be one of their best ones. In terms of production, they've got more guts in the sound now. So the idea of me doing melodic, almost country rock, you know, with just an area which I hadn't really tapped into. Mm-hmm. And I'd always loved bands like some of the Can't Eat stuff, uh-huh. On the Road Again,
yep.
ZZ Top, and you know, so many American artists that really sound great. I'd written some stuff when I was in my early 20s, which I had never recorded, like the song Is It You?
Mm-hmm.
Was a almost not religious, but you know, it was Can I Feel You, Lord? You know, that sort of, please, you know, you just want to, you need an affirmation with your creator. That's basically what it came down to.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these country songs are about that, you know. It's like, I need to find a girl, or I need to find God, or I need to find a man, or, you know, a dog or something to communicate with. And it just fitted that genre really well. So it was a kind of full circle thing, coming back to my early songwriting.
Oh, that's style, epic. Anyway. That's epic. Yeah. I love that sort of like that journey that you take through creativity. You know, you start out, I know for myself, you know, I remember being 14 and just wanting to play blistering punk, metal, funk, and then, you know, going, travelling through, getting a bit older, going into like really sludgy metal and trip hop, and then, you know, then sort of gravitating towards techno and hard house and gabba, and then drum and bass and jungle and dubstep, you know. And now here I am at like nearly 49, and I'm going right back to real minimal trip hop and like really atmospheric kind of stuff. It's fantastic. I love the journey. I love it. And it sounds like you've had a similar but possibly very different journey to me. So big ups.
The other thing, I was working in a club called Knowledge in London from 1990 to about 93, 92, 93. And it started off with quite minimal tech and house music. And then you could feel it was moving into drum and bass. And then it just got into gabba. And by gabba, I was like, oh, fuck no, I hate this shit. and it kind of, the club kind of fizzled out in the end, because the original base of it was techno, you know.
Yeah.
Detroit. Fucking powerful techno music, you know.
Oh, man.
Utilizing the biggest bass sounds you've ever heard.
Oh,
and
so good.
Just awesome.
So good.
Exploration.
So good.
And it was awesome.
I feel what you're saying about gabba. I mean, like, yeah, and that was a bit ridiculous, especially when it was getting up to 230, 240 BPM, and it was like, what even is this?
Yeah, too much.
Way too much. So if the Fetus/Jedtown sound was a pie, what would the filling be? Something surgically precise and cold, or a chaotic organic mess? And would the crust be strong enough to contain the internal pressure?
Man, you asked some pretty creative questions there, buddy. What would the internal... Again, I would just say it would just taste good. I wouldn't worry about what was in the filling.
Uh-huh.
It just seemed to taste good. It seemed right to eat at the time. And you look back now and you can just feel a bit of an honesty in there.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't catering for the pop charts. We were just doing what we felt, and that's the way it was, you know. I recently met up with Graham Revell from SBK, and it's amazing to see how he evolved over those years, like doing the industrial kind of noise with, you know. I actually showed him the Autopsy, and they used a lot of that dialogue within the Lichen Schrei
uh-huh.
album. And I often thought, you know, I actually use the visuals, whereas they use the visuals and the... So we both shared the same thing and knocked it out in the same studio.
Wow.
That I was recording Lethal Mania. They recorded Lycanstriker. And a couple of ex-Fetus guys recorded with them. And it was just a big pop, you know. In Sydney, Australia, there was a lot of awesome bands going at that time as well. And we kind of merged and played music together and had simmering sort of concepts, what we call our manifestos, I guess.
Yeah.
But again, it was all exploration.
Yeah.
And Graham ended up writing for over 150 soundtracks in LA.
Wow.
And it was so nice meeting up with him, because I always sort of carried a kind of a bleak look on the way he was back then.
Uh-huh.
But it, again, because he was him, he had a very strong idea what he was doing, and I had the same thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel I was quite lucky early on in my career that I had done that thing that I always wanted to do, which was find out who I am. And having that early experience of warmth and welcoming home to my soul, I guess you call it.
Yeah.
That was always going to be the guiding light for me.
I've
never varied from that. It's always been a blessing when I felt it, you know.
Wow, that's epic. Jed, thank you so much for being here with me today. Honestly, your art, your music, your video, everything has actually, and I was talking about this before, led me to where I am today. I just have to say thank you to everything that you've done.
Oh, cheers, bro.
Have an amazing rest of the day.
Thank you, I will.
I want to build myself into a machine that lives forever. I want to build myself into a machine.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.